Welcome to Inclusion Matters, produced by the Center for Inclusive Childcare,
aka the CICC.
We're located at inclusivechildcare.org.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast of the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Cindy Croft, director of the center, and I'm here today with Priscilla Weigel and Dia Anderson. Welcome.
Hi.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
So today in our podcast, we're going to tackle some common phrases heard out in the childcare community, and then maybe kind of turn those around a little bit and give the listeners some different ideas for guidance strategies around some of those concepts. Mm-hmm. So you two are going to leap right into it and,
sure.
and talk about some of the things that you hear when you're out and about.
Well, I think that the major thing that we want to address today is making sure that the words that we're using with children are teaching them something, that they're not just these rote little sayings that kind of almost automatically come out of our mouths,
mm-hmm.
Rather than taking the time to stop and think about what is the child learning from what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes they'll comply and they'll do some of the things that those phrases encourage, but then too, also some of those phrases are difficult for children with a special need, perhaps, to comply with. And we'll just start with a very common one, crisscross applesauce. Oftentimes, you know, you have a group of kids sit down for group time or any type of thing on the floor, and, you know, the lead staff or the person in charge will say, okay, everyone, crisscross applesauce. And for some children, that is a very challenging position to be in, just the crossing of their legs, their hip flexors aren't strong enough, their core muscles aren't able to really keep them stable, and so already they're at a deficit as far as being able to concentrate and listen because they're so focused on, I gotta hold this position and it's really not my favorite.
Right, and I think, I mean, I understand the rationale that teachers use to have children sit crisscross applesauce is that, you know, it helps them to be contained in their own space and they're not kicking and bothering the other children, but they need to learn that it's not okay to kick and bother the other children.
Right.
And I don't know about you, but if I sit crisscross applesauce for too long, my legs fall asleep.
Right, yeah.
So I kind of think for children it's the same thing. It's not necessarily comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, how many of us sit absolutely still,
right? Right.
When we're listening to something,
yeah.
or
yeah.
So I think we need to just think about children's comfort too and what they're learning.
What definitely. Do you think we could sort of offer to listeners as a alternative to using a phrase like that, or at making an assumption that all children should sit the same way for the same amount of time?
I think that even just saying, "Okay, boys and girls, everybody come over here. We're going to have a story. Find a place where you're comfortable." And what that does is that eliminates the, I can't see, I can't see, I can't see, I can't see. I mean, you're going to be holding the book or whatever so that they can know that that's where their eyes need to focus, so that they have an idea of what they're supposed to be watching and listening to and where you are because you're leading the activity. But then you're also leaving it open-ended to say, think about your bodies and what feels good to you. And so that might mean for some children, I know this is scandalous, but for some children it might be listening by being on their tummy, sitting with their, you know, elbows up and their chin in their hands. Or it might mean that it's another child maybe sitting close to one friend because they are leaning on each other and they're getting that proprioceptive input. And if it's okay with both of those kids to do that, then that's comfortable. It can mean that maybe some of them will choose crisscross applesauce because that's something that they're just used to doing and that's comfortable for their bodies. But to allow them a time to kind of adjust their bodies and get comfortable,
mm-hmm.
not based on how we want them to be sitting, but just in the long run, they're going to be more comfortable longer term, so they're going to be more successful at listening and participating.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and another thing that I've really seen is that, you know, when we're concentrating so much on making sure they're sitting crisscross applesauce, you know, teachers are stopping in the midst mm-hmm. of a story or those kinds of things, and it's distracting. It just mm-hmm. takes away from the whole group
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Where you think, oh, I love that page, and look, oh, got to stop and make sure that so-and-so is sitting right. And oh, yeah. And that phrase, sit still, really is impossible. It is impossible
right.
to sit
right.
still. So,
good.
So that, and kind of to add on to this, hands in your lap, or That's another thing that is, we can see the reasoning behind that, so mm-hmm. that they're not touching their friends or whatever. And so this is a time when we would maybe encourage a provider to pass around a sensory basket, mm-hmm. then have different items for the child to be squeezing
yes.
and using to stay engaged and provide sensory input and also keep their hands busy so that they're not necessarily just in their lap. Because for some children too, once again, that have instability issues or needs, they need their hands to be out at their sides to balance maybe when they're sitting at the rug. Or maybe somebody feels better sitting in a small rocking chair or on a little cushion. But it just, we need to be, again, open to what a child feels most comfortable doing. And then hands on the table, or when the kids are supposed to wait, that's another fun thing that we've seen a lot of out there, is just that whole idea of waiting when food's in front of you. Or waiting for your turn in a line when bathrooming is necessity, which oftentimes happens because the bathroom's not in the classroom. They have to go down the hall, or if you're in a family child care, you all have to kind of bathroom at the same time because there's just one provider taking care of that. Thinking about that word, wait, and what that, is it necessary? Is it useful? How can you help them use that waiting time instead of just sitting with their hands on the table or in their lap?
Right, right. Because really, when you think about just the whole nature of children, mm-hmm. that's really not an appropriate expectation.
Right, right.
Especially for those younger, you know, twos and threes. Mm-hmm. That's wait. It's just, it's really a monumental task for them right. to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to plan for those transition times, to really think about what could they be doing. Could they be singing a song? Could they be doing finger plays? And that's one thing I don't see very much of anymore.
Right. That's
are those
true.
Finger plays
yeah.
and poems and things like that, where, you know, when you think about it, the benefit of those, it's pre-literacy things. They're learning rhyming and kind of that cadence that goes with. It's also the fine motor manipulation of their hands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to do the finger plays, and children love those things.
Yeah.
So it makes me a little sad that I just don't see those things as much anymore, and they're such great tools for those transition times.
Excellent
and
ideas.
That bag of tricks is mm-hmm. really filled with things like that for all, and hiding something around the room each day, just something different, and describing it to the children.
Yeah.
Just keeping their attention off that waiting time.
Or that simple I Spy game.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you don't need any equipment for that.
You know, or just, I'm thinking of a...
Mm-hmm.
and describe it, and the children are, they love to play guessing games.
Right.
And they love to play with an adult.
Yeah.
And you can be playing that game and still be monitoring to make sure things are safe and going smoothly
mm-hmm.
at the same time.
And the children are still waiting. They're still... learning and increasing regulatory skills.
Right.
It's just that you're setting them up for better success during
right.
that waiting
They're
time.
Still waiting, but their minds and their hands are occupied.
They're mm-hmm. occupied in a useful way.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's going to create long-term
mm-hmm.
learning. Yeah. And I love the game, even just the little game of, there's someone in our room today who has, and then this mysterious, you know, clue, and
right.
the kids have to think about each other, and it draws attention, it builds
yep.
those relationships
yep.
too, which is another wonderful thing. Some other things that, and these may be scandalous when we start bringing up some of these other phrases, but they're common ones, and one of them just is a tool used often to have children keep quiet, and it's bubble in your mouth. And so immediately then the children puff up their cheeks, and some children I've seen forget to breathe sometimes because they get so full of this, oh, I have to keep this in my mouth and I have to keep my mouth closed. So what could we be doing instead of just saying bubble in your mouth when we walk out the door to go to another part of the building or another activity, or if children are being too noisy and we want them to be quiet? What can we be doing to teach them something and to use that time wisely? Not to put you on the spot, but...
Well, really, what is bubble in the mouth accomplishing?
Right. It's keeping their mouth
quiet.
So they want the children, it's a transition, or they're moving from one activity to another, or they want to give instruction.
Or not talking during circle time, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
So a period of time when they want children to be quiet. So, for one thing, don't you think examining the reason behind... Why do we need to be quiet right now?
Mm-hmm.
And is that a necessary thing right now? Do they really need to be not talking right
or
now?
Why is it, if we do need to be quiet right now, isn't it important for the children to know why they need to be quiet
exactly.
right now?
Right, instead
exactly.
of just saying that.
So teaching them, we're going to walk down the hall right now, and we don't want to disturb mm-hmm. the other classroom, so it's important. I mean, that's a teachable moment there.
Exactly.
Rather than bubble in your mouth doesn't teach you anything except that
your cheeks can get puffy when you fill them with air.
Right.
It doesn't help them learn to listen, which
right.
is a goal.
Right.
We certainly want to be intentional about helping children gain listening skills.
Mm-hmm.
And so that there's opportunities at those times to mm-hmm. talk about
right.
other components of, you know, what we're going to listen for, how we're helping children learn to be better listeners. And bubble in the mouth doesn't speak to children becoming
right.
better listeners,
right.
unless, as you say, you go on to explain what are we going to do in this period of
right.
quiet.
Right. And when it's circle time or something, say you're reading a story, and the children, of course, they get questions or things. You know, things pop in their minds as they're listening to the story. Some things trigger familiar memories and those kinds of things. And, you know, I think one way to deal with that is to say, first I'm going to read the story through once, and then I'm going to read it again, and we can talk about it. You can ask questions, and we can talk about the pictures. And just because that is such a rich conversation skill building time,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
just like snack and meal time are.
Sure.
There are times when you get to talk, you get to express yourself. And some of those children, that might be the only time of the day that they really do that,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That they get the opportunity to. So I think it's important that, yes, they need to learn to listen to the story, but it can also be the impetus for a great conversation
mm-hmm.
where they really are learning from each other
mm-hmm.
and you're learning what is interesting to them, which in the end then helps you to plan what your curriculum and what you're going to be
yeah.
exploring with them.
Right. And even too, if we really truly dissected the need to be quiet and not disturb, most of the time kids, when you know, I've been hanging around with kids for a long time, they get loud, but if we say to them, okay guys, let's think about, as we're walking down the hall, let's think about what color the lockers are, and if you can, you know, if give them something to focus on.
Right.
And also,
yep.
if they're a little bit noisy, guess what? They're children. Children are going to be a little bit noisy when they go from point A to point B. Silence is really kind of one of those unattainable goals, again, at like
yep.
sitting still. And so deciding, is this just rote for me, where I just know that when I get to that door, I say bubble in your mouth, and they all follow, but really why? Why?
Mm-hmm.
So thinking through as a teacher,
yep.
too, as a provider, as that person
mm-hmm.
who is in charge of those children, why do I have this expectation? So two of our last ones use your words is another one.
Definitely, use your words. You know, if you think about the mind of a child, they're going to go, what words am I supposed to use?
That's why I'm hitting, because I don't have the words. Please give them
yeah.
to me.
Yeah, you know, their brains are working faster than their minds can process that language. And
yeah, they're just going
to
do it.
You know, find the words that they need to use, and they may not know those words, and so using your words is really kind of a fruitless
right.
phrase.
And you can pair it with, oh, you forgot to use your words, my turn. Or, you know, so you're going to help them with those words, like you're giving it to them on a platter,
yes.
that phrase
mm-hmm.
that they can use
yes.
instead. But they'll often look
yes.
at you
much,
like, but Priscilla, that's why I didn't say anything. I don't know
yep.
what to do.
Much better to give them the words than to say use your words.
Right.
Excellent.
And then another question that is unanswerable by most preschoolers out there in the world, why did you do that? Or maybe they can answer it, but that's not the real important point of that. I mean, if there's something that happened that's not okay, addressing that
right.
instead of just saying, kind of playing that blame game, why did you do that, what were you thinking, all those types of things. That's more of a shaming
right.
strategy than a true guidance strategy. Oops, you forgot the rule. Remember, we keep our hands in our pockets when we walk down the
right.
hall.
And when we really think about it, if we ask ourselves, why did I do that? There's a lot of times I don't know why I do
sure.
something.
Right. And you're a grown-up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. And our last one, you're lying, or why are you lying, or you lied to me, and all those things. That's something that I think, when you think about children, when they say something that isn't true like that, they're obviously backed into a corner out of fear.
Right.
They're scared they're going to get in trouble. It's an awful feeling. It's kind of that panic response of, oh, and it's you can sense the anxiety building in a child.
It's that fight or flight.
Right.
You know, how am I going to get out of this?
Yep. So they'll make up a story maybe, or they'll maybe point to their friend and say, oh, he did it or she did it. Or we know that really most children don't have that malicious plan, I'm going to deceive Dia on purpose. They're not plotting and planning to tell a story that's going to, you know, get them out of some terrible incarceration or whatever. I mean, they're just little kids, and they're trying that in that first response of, how can I keep myself safe?
Right. And
so how do you guide away from, you know, helping children so they don't feel like they have to make up a story or blame somebody else, or, you know, so when the impulse of the teacher is to say, you're telling a lie, what can be the response of the teacher instead to get at the true function?
I think that if you are really having a conversation with a child and you're feeling yourself wanting to say that because you know you actually saw what just happened and you know that what the child is telling you is not truth, I think not spending tons of time on the untruth, but why the child would feel it. So helping the child work through some of those thoughts and feelings. Were you kind of worried that I was going to get mad when that chair tipped over? So, and I am really glad no one got hurt, and I'm really glad that we can just pick it back up and put it back against under the table, and everybody's going to be safe. That would be my response, because it diffuses the fight or flight
right there.
Completely.
And I think, too, we talk about using reflective practice with adults, and really there's no reason we can't use that with children too. We can wonder with them. Wonder why that happened.
And it diffuses it too.
It does.
Because you're not pointing a finger at anyone.
Right.
You're just wondering together.
I think these are all really great strategies. Again, I hope people listening are realizing that we are coming from the position of, we just want to help listeners find different kinds of ways to guide behaviors, and it's easy to fall into some of those much used old expressions. But what we really want is to give them some new ways to approach what are pretty common behaviors at times. So
I have one more that I thought of.
Okay, all righty.
Sorry, no, our podcast is going longer than typical, but another one was just the pat phrase, no thank you. Teaching kids just to say that in a general sense, and really not also going to the real reason behind the comment. So a lot of times folks use that as a guidance strategy. Tell your friend no thank you if they're doing something you don't like. Well, why not just say, I don't like it when you're hitting me? Why not just say, I don't like that you took my, or that makes me sad that you took my rolling pin when I was playing with the Play-Doh, or that hurt my feelings when you told me you didn't want to be my friend. So that's another layer of that whole thought of, we have to help kids gain the skills and tools, because we're not always going to be there. And someday they may think, why did we always just say no thank you? Because really, no thank you is a phrase reserved for something entirely different.
Well, it goes back to give them words.
Right.
True.
We want them to really express what they're thinking and feeling, and we want to help them because they don't have all those words always, depending on their cognitive level.
No thank you does not tell that other child what you don't like.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, it's not teaching them anything.
Right.
And again, you know, we just want to be clear in that there are times that we have caught ourselves saying some of these very same phrases, but we've just thought about, you know, we've just taken the time to really think about why do we say these things, and the importance of being intentional about teaching children.
Right.
Well, and we're
our words really teaching.
Exactly. And we'll wrap this up with, I think that between the two of you, we could probably talk about other phrases and many things you hear out there. And the point really is, is for, as you said, Dia, for teachers and providers to really be intentional in their language and their words, to really think about what are they teaching with their phrases, and not to fall back on some of those pat phrases, but to think about how can I really teach with what I'm saying in these moments that are really teachable moments.
Right.
Thank you.
Child by child, experience by experience.
Exactly. Thank you both very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That's all for now. See you next time.